If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
The Senate on Saturday passed President Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief package, which includes a $1,400 stimulus check. So go out and buy yourself something nice, like November's rent.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with Eddie Murphy. But first, a closer look.
Not a single Republican voted for the historic $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill passed by the Senate this weekend. In fact, Republicans spent most of the weekend trying to derail it while still whining about Dr. Seuss. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. The past few months have offered a deeply revealing look at the state of American democracy and the course it could take over the next few years without major reforms. On the one hand, we saw a political faction, which represents a minority of American voters, try to overturn an election they lost and then sow a violent insurrection to interfere with the lawful counting of electoral votes. And then, about 2 months later, we saw 50 Senate Democrats, who represent about 41 million more Americans than the 50 Senate Republicans, vote to deliver one of the largest rescue bills in history, which has been massively popular in poll after poll. And not a single Republican joined them in the Senate or in the House. They were too busy doing dumb like this.
Green Eggs and Ham by Dr. Seuss. I am Sam. I am Sam. Sam I am. Do you like green eggs and ham? I do not like them, Sam I am. You do not like them? Say so you say. Try them, and you may. Say, I like green eggs and ham. I do. I like them, Sam I am. I do so like green eggs and ham. Thank you, Sam I am. Enjoy your day.
Well, I can't now. Not after that performance. There's nothing cringier than watching a grown adult in a suit read Dr. Seuss to an empty room with no children around. Is that the Fox News version of Reading Rainbow, Reading Rainblows? This is what a hostage video would look like if Barney was the kidnapper. Serious Stockholm Syndrome when you get kidnapped by Barney. You're so mad when you get rescued. You don't understand. I love him. He loves me. Most importantly, Green Eggs and Ham isn't canceled, you goober. It's on Amazon's bestseller list, thanks to all your whining. I wouldn't be surprised if we find out the Seuss people did this just to move more product. No one's buying our books. Say we're pulling them for racism. They will fly off the shelves! No one canceled anything. The copyright holder voluntarily withdrew 6 books from publication because of racist imagery and language. The books include titles like The Cat's Quizzer and McElligot's Pool, which I'm guessing is where Steve Bannon drowned. When it comes to Fox News and the Republican Party, their brand is overreaction. Take their feigned outrage over The Muppet Show. Disney decided to add a disclaimer in front of an episode with a Confederate flag, among others, but it's Fox News, not Fox Nuance, so they act like Kermit the Frog was thrown in an unmarked van, never to be seen or heard from again. You can still see the episode. And just to show you cancel culture isn't real, it stars Johnny Cash, who shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. No second reason. Anyway, the point is, this is what our two major political factions have decided to spend their time on. One's trying to deliver a massively popular relief bill that includes direct payments, expanded child and unemployment benefits, and funding for vaccinations. And another is holding story time for ghost children in a library of the damned, trying to overturn the election, and trying to prevent people from voting in the next one. The tidal wave of anti-voting legislation unleashed by Republican state legislatures over the past few weeks has gotten so insane that Georgia Republicans have proposed a series of bills that would, among other things, target black voters, ban no-excuse absentee ballots, roll back Sunday voting, and ban what is known as line warming, the practice of having volunteers provide water, snacks, chairs, and other assistance to voters in line. Holy they're trying to ban voters from having water, snacks, and chairs? Republicans want to turn voting into one of those extreme radio station contests where whoever goes the longest without peeing gets two backstage passes to an Aerosmith concert. If the GOP had their way, there'd be one polling place in every state open for like 3 hours a week. And instead of a school, it would be at the end of an American Ninja Warrior-style obstacle course. If you don't bring three forms of ID, you get knocked off the platform by a giant foam hand. Also, I love how the Party of Freedom wants to make it illegal to give someone a snack. They're canceling snacks! Quick, get Kevin McCarthy on YouTube so we can read the ingredients on a pack of Oreos. Unbleached, enriched flour, canola oil, or palm oil. Enjoy your day. I guess in the GOP's America, voters aren't allowed to drink water unless it's from McElligott's pool. So that's the central story of our political culture at the moment. One coalition is becoming increasingly deranged and extreme and anti-democracy, and the other is still committed to competent governance. And look, that doesn't mean this bill is perfect. Far from it. For one thing, the bill keeps the expanded unemployment benefits at $300 rather than the original $400 Democrats had aimed for, and it sets them to expire by Labor Day, a deal forced by moderate Democrat Joe Manchin for reasons no one seems to understand on either side of the aisle. When asked what Manchin's issue was, his fellow moderate Democrat John Tester said, "I don't know. I really don't." Republican Shelley Moore Capito said, "I have no idea what he's doing." Cool, because that's what you want in a Senate that's split 50-50, a wild card. Side note, that photo right there was taken just as Manchin found out he was a Democrat. I am? Oh, man, in West Virginia? Good luck to me. It's weird to hear senators talking about one of their colleagues the way baseball announcers talk about a streaker. And now he's wrestling the T-shirt gun away from the Philly fanatic. Do you know what he's doing out there, Buck? I really don't. Either we're all getting T-shirts or we're going to see a man get his nuts tasered off. A 50-50 split means all the Democrats have to stick together. You can't have one guy splintering off at the last minute. It's like an escape room where everyone's focused on the clue hidden under the genie's lamp, and one guy's like, I bet I can just kick this door down. Devin, can you just use your brain for once and waste these quads? No, thank you. Then there's the fact that a group of Democratic senators and independent Angus King split off and joined Republicans in voting down a proposal to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which is widely popular in polls and something President Biden campaigned on. One member of that group, Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema, has gotten a lot of criticism for the enthusiastic thumbs down she gave the bill on the Senate floor, like a judge on America's Got Talent after an 8-year-old bombs doing stand-up. Sorry, Tyler, but the 90s called. They want their joke format back. But let's not lose sight of the senators from safe Democratic seats like Chris Coons and Tom Carper in Delaware who voted it down for no reason other than they don't like it on policy grounds. I mean, what's wrong with you guys? You're not going to face any serious Republican opposition, and yet you're still siding with them? Watching these guys is like watching LeBron play defense against himself. By the way, playing defense against himself is the only way he'll ever get called for a foul. I'm just kidding. I love him, and I want him to be my friend. But with all that said, it's important not to understate the truly seismic nature of this bill and all the incredible good it will do for millions of poor and working-class Americans. For one thing, it's way bigger than the 2009 stimulus, and that's a good thing because the 2009 stimulus wasn't nearly enough. This bill sends about $350 billion in state and local governments to keep services running, save pensions and schools and public transit, and keep people employed. It sends out direct payments to about 85% of Americans, and it expands unemployment benefits and child benefits. One study suggested that the bill will reduce poverty by a third, lifting nearly 13 million Americans out of it, and that child poverty would be reduced by more than half. Meanwhile, for a family of four with one working parent and one who remains unemployed because of childcare constraints, the benefits could total more than $12,000. But what about the tax credit for high earners who use S corporations to buy fine art for their catamarans? Who will think of the catamarans? Anyway, the point is, this is a flawed but really good bill that delivers desperately needed help to the people who need it most on a scale that's necessary to make an actual difference in the economy and in people's lives. And that, of course, means Republicans did everything they could to derail it with bull****. like Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who offered an amendment to stop the checks from going to undocumented immigrants, even though the bill doesn't do that anyway, and he was immediately rebuffed by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin.
Mr. President, moments ago, the Democrats in this chamber just voted to send $1,400 stimulus checks to murderers, to rapists, and child molesters incarcerated in prison. This amendment before us today provides that the stimulus check should not go to illegal aliens in this country. Should your money, should taxpayer money, be sent $1,400 to every illegal alien in America?
Mr. President, the statement of the senator from Texas is just plain false. False. Let me be clear. Undocumented immigrants do not have Social Security numbers, and they do not qualify for stimulus relief checks, period. And for you to stand up there and say the opposite is just to rile people up over something that's not true.
Will the senator yield for a question?
No, I won't. It is not true. And we know what's going on here. They want to be able to give speeches to say the checks go to undocumented people.
Cruz is so bad at this, he can't even be subtle about his bull fear-mongering. Democrats just voted to send stimulus checks to murderers, rapists, child molesters, Chuckies, Jasons, Xenomorphs, Freddy Kruegers, and Qualos. Second, I love his sociopathic little chuckle at the end there. Millions out of work and poverty, facing food insecurity, and it's all so funny to him. Or maybe he was just remembering when he grabbed the maracas away from a mariachi at the Senor Frogs in Cancun. So Democrats stuck together to fend off GOP stonewalling and passed a historic relief bill that could not come at a more precarious time. We're currently at what may well be a crossroads in the pandemic. There's lots of good news, but also some bad news. Vaccinations are accelerating at a previously unthinkable pace, with nearly 3 million doses administered on Saturday alone. Cases have fallen as dramatically as they ever have since the peak in January, but cases also now seem to be plateauing at a stubbornly high number of 60 to 70,000 per day, which leaves more than enough virus circulating for one more deadly outbreak before summer. And yet several states are racing to prematurely lift mask mandates or open up entirely, from Texas to Mississippi, Alabama, and even Connecticut, where the mask mandate will remain in effect, but capacity limits will be lifted on retail, restaurants, and gyms. Why would you lift capacity on gyms? The whole business model for gyms is that people join them and then don't go. It's just a key fob that costs $100 a month to carry around. There should be capacity limits on gyms even when there isn't a pandemic. No one wants to change into running shoes right next to one of those weirdly jacked 80-year-olds air drying his nuts. Bad things happen when I put it away wet. Stay out of my space, Grandpa. Now's not the time to take our foot off the gas. If we just hunker down and spend the next month or two crushing this thing, combined with the ramped-up vaccinations, we could have a potentially great summer. Think about it. We could have block parties, neighborhood barbecues, street fairs. Do you remember street fairs in New York? You'd be in a cab in a rush, heading to your apartment, and all of a sudden the road would be closed, and you'd say, ah, street fairs. We can have that back soon. And yet, if you express any caution or hesitation at all about opening up too quickly in the hopes that we'll be able to crush this thing by summer, Fox News, the same people who spread lies about everything from masks to social distancing to lockdowns to the COVID death toll to vaccines to scam miracle cures, have the gall to accuse you of being pro-pandemic.
We might be out of the pandemic by summer, medically. We'll see how long it will take us to get out of the pandemic politically. Dr. Siegel, thanks so much for telling us about this new...
Great point, Will. Great. Well, there's plenty of people that want that pandemic to continue, but it is not us. Thanks for having me.
Exactly.
Are you out of your mind? Nobody wants this godforsaken pandemic to go any longer. We've all been trapped inside for a year. Forget going to gyms or movie theaters. I'd give anything to be on a packed F train right now without air conditioning, getting crushed on one side by a guy with a bike and the other side by a guy with a lizard on his shoulders. This is the central story of our politics right now. One political coalition, for all its faults, is focused on actually governing, and the other has become unmoored from reality and fueled entirely by imagined cultural grievances over everything from children's books to the Muppets. And with a few exceptions, Republicans have made the conscious decision to lean into that. They've made the cynical calculation that sticking with a racist, authoritarian criminal who sowed an insurrection to overthrow democracy is the path to power. Senator Lindsey Graham told Axios last night he's trying to harness the energy of the Trump movement.
There's something about Trump. There's a dark side, and there's some magic there. What I'm trying to do is just harness the magic. To me, Donald Trump is sort of a cross between Jesse Helms, Ronald Reagan, and P.T. Barnum.
And that sounds like a good combination to you. Who else are you going to include? John Gotti and Jabba the Hutt? Also, what do you mean you want to harness the magic? You sound like a regional theater director trying to whip your cast into shape for a production of Our Town. Come on, people. You're supposed to practice these dance numbers on your own time. You need to stop whining and harness the magic, or else my meemaw's going to keep telling me I wasn't cut out for Broadway. At least I have dreams, meemaw! Majority of House Republicans voted to overturn the November election results, and not a single one of them voted to fund vaccinations and send urgently needed relief to the American people amid a pandemic and economic crash. That simple fact should tell you everything you need to know about the state of our politics. Whatever their flaws, the Democrats' message to voters is this. Do you like checks? Do you like unemployment benefits? Do you like money for children, schools, vaccines, and pensioners? And the Republicans' message to voters is...
Do you like green eggs and ham?
This has been A Closer Look.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
We are so excited to welcome our first guest tonight, who is an Oscar-nominated and Emmy Award-winning actor and comedy legend whose hit films include Trading Places, Beverly Hills Cop, The Nutty Professor, and Shrek. He reprises his role as Prince Akeem Jaffer in the highly anticipated film Coming to America, which is streaming on Amazon Prime Video now. Please welcome to the show the one, the only, Eddie Murphy. How are you, Eddie?
Hey, how are you, Seth?
Absolutely thrilled to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much.
I know it seems like a million years ago, mostly because there was a full audience in the studio, and thank God for that. But you did go back and you hosted SNL after an incredibly long break. And I just wonder how quickly did it come back? Did muscle memory kick in for what a week at SNL was like?
Yeah, it does. You know, from doing that show, it's such a grind. Once you leave there, I found that 36 years later, you can go back and you fall right back into it. It was surreal. It was like going back to old high school.
You know, this film, one of the most wonderful things about it is seeing people who were in the first movie. But it was especially exciting for me to see the new characters you welcomed into the film. I'm very good friends with Leslie Jones.
Leslie Jones in this movie.
Right?
Leslie Jones. Oh, so funny.
I mean, I said to her, look, it's always great to kill in a movie, which you did, but you killed in a movie alongside Eddie Murphy, and that just must be such a thrill for her. How long have you been aware of Leslie?
For years. I saw Leslie years ago in an after hours comedy club, like downtown LA, with some spot that was maybe like 15 people were in. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And that's when I first saw her. And she turned it out. She's always like, oh, I wish you don't remember that show. She killed. It was like this after hours place. And I saw it at the Laugh Factory. So I was aware of her as a comic.
I mean, in a way, you're sort of putting together a superhero team when you cast these movies, because it strikes me that you have this like sort of multi-generational cast, and it must be tastes of yours from when you were a kid, you know, for example, when you have James Earl Jones, and then obviously younger actors who you've obviously seen and thought they're going to be great in this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did a movie years ago, Harlem Nights, with Richard Pryor and Red Fox. And that was another one of those movies where it was older generation and the new comics. Robin Harris, a great comic that passed away, he was in the movie as well. And my brother, Charlie. And yeah, I kind of get a kick out of, you know, connecting with the older ones, with the younger ones, and being in the middle.
I recently saw, it was posted online by Netflix. It was Arsenio Hall telling a story about Richard Pryor once bringing you up on stage, I believe at the Comedy Store. Was he always nice?
He was always super nice to me, Rich. Always super nice.
And he brought you on stage, according to the story, and then he just sat on the edge of stage while you did your set. Was that intimidating or was it thrilling?
that was thrilling. I turned it out. It was like he was sitting there. It was like I wanted to show off. Watch this, you know, just to make him laugh was amazing. So no, I wasn't intimidated at all.
One of your daughters plays one of the princesses in the film.
Yes, a beautiful baby girl, Bella.
Of your kids, is she the only one who's shown sort of a taste for being on camera so far?
No. All of my kids, most of my kids are acting or writing or, you know, have interest in the arts. Yeah.
That's really nice. I mean, nor can you blame them. It's certainly turned out very well for you. I have more questions. We'll be right back with Eddie Murphy after this. So when did it occur to you, hey, we have to go back, we have to do a sequel to this movie? Enough times passed.
Maybe about 6 years ago. We had no idea we were going to make this movie when we finished the original one. It was like the story ended and like they lived happily ever after. And then the movie over the years became like, it's the only one of my movies that became like a cult movie where it has like an audience of people that watch it all the time. And, you know, some people get dressed up on Halloween. There's a place that turns, a restaurant that turns itself into a McDowell's restaurant on Halloween. And they have like sexual chocolate maltits on their menu. So it was like, hey, this movie is this cult following. You know, if we could figure out a way to connect those dots, there's an audience for this picture. That was about 6 years ago.
Don't get me wrong, you and Arsenio have aged great, but it's really fun to see the barbershop characters because none of them have aged a day.
No, they are older.
You made them older.
If you watch the original movie, you see they look much older.
Oh, that's good.
Well, in the original movie, they look like they're in their like early 60s, and now they look like they're in their early 90s.
One of the things that must be so time-consuming is sitting and getting into the makeup like that. But the freedom of playing those extra characters, it must be worth the time you sit in the makeup chair.
It's the most rewarding thing when you do those and it works and it's funny. And the best thing, my favorite thing is lots of times people watch those movies and they don't realize it's, you know, us doing those characters because that's in the marketing when the movie first comes out. But once it's around, people don't know. They don't read the credits. They just see it and, you know, don't even realize it. And that's my favorite when they don't know that it's me. And, you know, I tell them, oh, I'm that old Jewish guy. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm the old Jewish guy. And they go, oh, that's my favorite thing.
Hey, I mean this sincerely. This is a free idea I want to, because as you talk about playing multiple characters, I think the Oscars should start doing something where they give out an award every year for a movie that is 25 years old that the Oscars admits now deserved an Oscar. And I feel like next year, The Nutty Professor should get the first of these. Because I just feel like it represents everything that movies are supposed to be. And when I think about those dinner table scenes and being lucky enough, especially now when people aren't seeing movies in theaters with a bunch of people, like I remember being in the theater, like collectively laughing like that. And so that's my free pitch to the Oscars, is that you get the Oscar you deserve for that movie.
Oh, thank you so much, man. That's one of my favorites, too.
The amazing thing is just the rhythm and pacing of scenes where you realize, oh, it's just you in five different chairs, and the fact that you have to figure that out. I mean, obviously, a great deal of it happens in editing, but when you actually see the finished product, are you also, even though you were there at different times, are you blown away as well?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and like I said, it's rewarding, but it's thankless because if it's done really, really well, you can't see all the work that went into it. So like a scene around the table that took, you know, 2 weeks to shoot, and that whole sequence winds up being, you know, three, four minutes long, and the audience isn't thinking about any of that stuff. So it's rewarding but thankless.
It was worth it. I want to tell you it was worth it. I read that originally Tracy Morgan was going to play your son in this film until you guys realized that I guess you only have about a 7 or 8 year age difference. And it would maybe be a hard sell.
The third draft of the script, we were still writing Tracy as my son. Then we started going, would you believe Tracy was me and Leslie's son? And it was like, no, I don't believe that. So we had to, you know, turn him into the uncle.
I like that in a movie where there's so much that's unbelievable, that's the one journey people aren't willing to make. They'll believe there's a fictional African nation, but they're like, I won't go for that. Wesley Snipes is also really funny in this movie.
Wesley is amazing in this movie. I did a movie last year with him, Dolomite Is My Name, and he was hysterical and just a wonderful actor, and we had a really great screen chemistry, so I went right into this movie with him, and so happy. I originally was going to play General Izzy, and it was like, Wesley Snipes would be so much better, and he really, really, he gets funny and menacing, and just a great actor.
There are, you know, I don't want to give away too much, but I mean, it is really fantastic, the number of cameos, the number of iconic people, not just from the 90s, but from the last 50 years. And at this point, is it pretty easy for you to pick up the phone and say to someone like Morgan Freeman, I have a very good part for you in this movie. Would you do me a solid? Is that happened pretty simply, or is it hard?
He was like, we were like, you think Morgan would do it? And we went through the agents and all that stuff. And when he did it, we jumped around and danced. It wasn't easy.
That's good. I'm glad to know there's still people out there that are hard for Eddie Murphy to get.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. We didn't think of it as being easy, and we thought we were the luckiest people ever when he said yes.
Well, I can only imagine what it was like being on set, considering how enjoyable it was to watch it. I've got one thing. I'll cut it out if you don't want to answer it. My friend Neil Brennan? He's friends with you.
Yes.
He told me a story about how Paul Mooney tried to beat you up outside of the Comedy Store.
Nah, not tried to beat me up. First of all, Paul Mooney could never beat me, not even when he was young. In fact, most comics, as far as comics go, I'm pretty scrappy. I don't know if I've met a comic that, you know, could, at any rate. But no, it was an argument because they gave me the light the first time I was at the Comedy Store. Paul Mooney and them, they gave me the light because I was going on. I just kept going and going. I hadn't met Paul Mooney yet. And they gave me the light. And I was like first year SNL. And I was killing. And I was like, they're giving me the light. And I was only up for like 10 minutes. And I said, Who's supposed to be coming on? They said, Paul Mooney. I said, who's Paul Mooney? And they said, yeah. I said, you want to see me or Paul Mooney? And I said, So I did like another hour or something. So when I came off the stage, they were like crazy. And Spoon, Witherspoon was in by the bathroom at the Comedy Store. And he said, next time you told you to get off that stage, you better get off that stage. I said, man, you. He said, you have mama too. And we went outside the parking lot. Then Mooney came walking up. And he's like, excuse me, homie. Yes, you have a routine about the Amityville Horror, about a ghost in the house. And I was like, yes. He said, well, I have a routine that's very similar. Let me hear your routine, homie. And I was like, I'm not doing my routine in the parking lot. And he said, you. And I was with John Landis. He said, and he said, and you too, white man. If I had a knife, if I had a gun, I'd shoot the both of you. That was the first night I met Paul Mooney. And then when Richard heard about it, he took Mooney and Spoon, and he made them come to the main room at the Comedy Store the next night and after hours and apologized to me.
Wow.
Richard made them apologize. He was like, hey, you guys are just being mean to that kid because he's a new hot and y'all was jealous and that y'all apologized. And Richard made them apologize. Richard was always so nice. And then Mooney became a great friend and Spoon as well. But the very first night I met them, Spoon was like, you and your mama.
Well, needless to say, I am glad I asked. Hey, thanks so much, Eddie. Please come back soon.
Okay, Seth. When it's all safe to come back, I'll come check you out, bro.
We'd really like that. Thank you so much. Coming to America is currently streaming on Amazon Prime Video.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.